April 11th meeting of the Senate Finance Committee will come to order just for, and a quorum is present. There are several people, a couple of members who are participating electronically. Finance Committee today, just for members' information, is going to meet from 8:30 till 10. We're going to recess at 10 and we'll return 30 minutes after the floor session ends. And as of the plans, we are starting with Senator Port's bill. And I'm guessing, lest things fly very quickly, we will not get to either the agriculture, the Senator Putnam's agriculture bill, or the disaster assistance contingency account until after session. Tomorrow, just for members' sake, we're starting at 9 a.m. We're going to deal with judiciary, then jobs, labor, and finally commerce. And with that, Senator Port, welcome to the Senate Finance Committee with the housing bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, I'm here today with Senate File 2566, the Senate Housing Omnibus Bill. I will say this looks a lot different than past housing omnibus bills because it is significantly bigger. In the sort of history of the Minnesota Senate, housing typically gets about 0.4% of our state budget. Less than 0.5%, which frankly does not come even close to meeting the needs of our communities. This year we're making a substantially larger investment in affordable housing across the state with $1 billion in a one-time investment into housing. In this bill, the $1 billion investment is spread over three main areas. The first being supply, really building up supply, which is a huge need across the state. We are over 10,000 units below what we need, significantly over that, which means we need to make this large investment, especially to make sure that those units, as they are created, are affordable for families. The second area that the bill covers is rental assistance, to make sure that folks can stay in their homes. As we've seen, housing costs increase dramatically throughout the state. Wages have not increased at similar rates. And so people are just simply being priced out of their communities, and rental assistance is able to fill that gap. And the final piece is down payment assistance. In Minnesota, we have a drastic and shameful disparity gap between who owns homes. Only about 25% of Black Minnesotan families own their own homes. And so we have a first generation down payment assistance program in this bill that will help to close that gap. There are, you know, a lot of programs and investments in this bill to really make sure that we are meeting communities where they are. We know that housing looks different across the state, and so we need to not have a one-size-fits-all solution, but really tackle the problem from the whole spectrum. This bill makes a historic investment in constructing new houses across the state, prioritizing the needs of renters, seniors, and families who are facing homelessness as part of our solution to the housing crisis. The budget, this budget balances the various needs across the state, investing money, as I said, into rental assistance, homelessness prevention, down payment assistance, the preservation of NOAA, and the development of new homes. This is our largest ever step towards ending family homelessness in Minnesota's history, and I'm incredibly proud of this bill.
Thank you. Are there questions from the committee? And if not, maybe before we do the walkthroughs and so on, there is a, I believe, a technical amendment. Senator Port, do you want to, is that A22? And Mr. Mueller, you want to go ahead and explain it?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The A22 amendment contains a few clarifications that were either omitted inadvertently from the bill or just cleaning up some of the language. Lines 1 of the A22 amendment lines 1.2 through 1.6. There's a change in section 6 of the bill that adds loans to one of the programs, and this just conforms the appropriation language to that change. Lines 1.7 all the way down to 2.1. This comes from Senate File 817, which deals with some programs with manufactured homes. This language was adopted by amendment in committee, but onto Senate File 817, but these changes were inadvertently not in the omnibus bill. So this just adds changes that were put in committee. And then the last part on lines 2.2 through 2.7, this again is another one of the grant programs that was in Senate File 817 dealing with manufactured homes. And just this clarifies the language within that last grant program to make sure it's a grant program and not solely a revolving loan program. And it ties back to the appropriation language.
Okay, thank you. Senator Wicklund moves the A22 amendment. Is there any discussion on the technical amendment? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Port, do you want to do A23 next?
Let's, if we could, Mr. Chair, could we do the walkthrough?
Oh,
the
sure. Go
walkthrough?
Ahead. Whatever you wish. Go ahead, Mr. Mueller.
Mr. Chairman and members, as Senator Port mentioned, the housing budget area has a target of $1 billion over the base, and that this bill in front of us contains $950 million of that $1 billion target. Previously, the Senate has passed House File 1440, which was a fiscal year 23 one-time emergency rental assistance program, and that was $50 million. So the combination of that earlier bill that was passed by the Senate and this bill together, which is $950 million, gives us the $1 billion. And the TALES target was $50 million. And as I go through the spreadsheet, I will point out that how the TALES target of $50 million is spent. The spreadsheet here, there are a number of columns I'll point out quickly. The actual 2021 shows the spending of this budget area in two bienniums ago, which was $120.6 million. And then the current biennium that we're in now, fiscal year 22-23, the spending is 125.6. And then the base budget was 115.6 million. So jumping over to the Senate columns will show I'll go off that change column. A number of the programs on lines 7 through 30 are existing programs that have additional money added to them, and then below that are new programs that are funded with one-time money. Now, again, the target was one-time, so almost all the programs here, the new money is all one-time, except until we get down to rental assistance. That one has tails. So the change items I'll start to go through on line 7 is the challenge program. There was $100 million added to that program. And of that, on line 8, there's a set aside of $10 million for urban homeworks. On line 9, workforce housing and development program, there was an additional $40 million added to that. On line 10, the manufactured home park infrastructure grant, there was $25 million added to that program. Workforce home ownership program on 9/11, there's $35 million added to that program. The housing trust fund, which is a housing program that tries to find housing for people who are about to be or have been homeless, $20 million was added to that program. And of that amount, $10 million is for a proposal for limited equity cooperative housing grants, which is a new program within the housing trust fund for providing housing for low-income people. The homework starts with home, line 14, that was an additional $5 million on top of that program. The Bridges Rental Assistance Program was another $10 million added to that program. The Family Homeless Prevention Program, line 16, there was $50 million added to the first year of that program, and there are three set-asides within that. The Neighborhood House is a program in St. Paul, $2.4 million. Landlord Mitigation, $5 million. That comes from the governor's budget proposal. And then $10 million is set aside for American Indian tribes, and that was also a new item in the governor's budget. The Homeownership Assistance Fund is appropriated an additional $25 million. The next three line items, Affordable Rental Investment Fund, Owner-Occupied Housing Rehabilitation, and Rental Housing Rehabilitation are all funded at base levels. The line 24, Homeownership Education and Counseling, or HECAT, these are grant programs to help people gain some of the knowledge and everything for buying first-time houses, $3 million. Capacity Building Grants is additional $9.17 million, and there is a couple set-asides within that. The Community Stabilization Project at $445,000. The Homeless Management Information System is a base item. And then Open Access Voicemail is $85,000 within that capacity grants. The Family Stabilization Plan, or under Build Wealth, has an additional $5 million in the first year. And that can be used between the 9,000 Equities Fund and some money through the Stair Step program. Now we get to some of the new programs that are new to the bill, and I'll try to give a really brief explanation of what some of those programs are. Line 31, housing infrastructure. This is $100 million that will be used the same way that the housing infrastructure bonds are, but by using cash instead of the bonds, that provides the agency with a little bit more flexibility in how they can use this money. Lines 33 through 34, community stabilization. This is also called NOAA, which is a naturally occurring affordable housing. This money goes to help local governments update some of their multifamily and rental housing and owner-occupied housing. And of this, $30 million is for Minneapolis Public Housing Authority. Line 35, strength and supportive housing for $40 million. This was the governor's initiative. It's for individuals and families who are at risk of homelessness, and it coordinates services with the Department of Health and Department of Human Services. Line 36, the first generation home buyer. Senator Port mentioned this one. This provides down payment assistance to first-time home buyers whose parents or legal guardians either have never owned a home or have lost it to foreclosure. Lines 37 and 38, the local housing trust fund grants. This has been funded in the past with some one-time money, but it provides money to local governments. Local governments can establish their own local housing trust funds, and this is a matching grant program that would match local revenues. And of this amount, $2 million is for the Northland Foundation, which is in northern Minnesota. The Greater Minnesota Housing Infrastructure Grant Program for $5 million. These are grants to local governments for up to 50% of the cost of infrastructure that would otherwise have to be paid for by a developer. The Housing Mediation Program at $4 million. This is a new program that would help fund dispute resolution and mediation services between renters and property owners. Line 41 is one of the programs that the A22 amendment was amending, and this is the Manufactured Home Park Cooperative Purchase Pool. This is a revolving loan program to assist residents of manufactured home parks to organize and purchase manufactured home parks as a cooperative. Line 42 is another manufactured home grant program, and this is for $25 million to award grants to an organization outside of the Housing Finance Agency to provide financing for either new manufactured homes or rehabilitated manufactured homes. Line 43 is the Lead Safe Homes Program for $5 million. This provides grants to nonprofits or local units of governments to do lead abatement in multifamily rental units. Line 44, the high-rise sprinkler grants. This is for rental housing units that have housing or people living above 75 feet and do not currently have sprinkler systems. And it also requires a report determining how many buildings that are sort of meet this criteria, that if this $10 million is enough to cover all the ones that are out there, we are asking for a report from all cities of the first class and second class to provide how many other buildings that might meet this qualification to find out if there's more money needed in the future. Line 45 is the rental assistance program that Senator Port mentioned. This is the one program that does have some tails. It provides $131.3 million for rental assistance, and then there's $10 million per year in the tails. Last two items, line 46 is homeownership investment grant. Excuse me. This provides $80 million for grants, and it runs through community development financial institutions, or CFIs, and this is to help increase the supply of affordable owner-occupied homes through new construction or rehabilitation. Line 47 is the Housing Cost Reduction Incentive Program, $2.5 million, and this is grants to cities for fee waivers or other reductions to local fees. And then the last item I'll point out on the spreadsheet is Article 2 authorizes $250 million of housing infrastructure bonds, or HIBs. That's on line 25. And the debt service for that additional $250 million will start in fiscal year 26 and in fiscal year 27. So the biennial cost in the tails is $30 million. So between that debt service of $30 million in the tails and the rental assistance of $20 million in the tails, that is the $50 million target. And that is it for the spreadsheet. The second page of the spreadsheet, again, just goes over just the change items in the bill, but I did point those all out on the first page here. And I would answer any questions on the spreadsheet if there are any.
Questions from members of the committee? You apparently answered them in advance. Okay. We also have, go ahead, Mr.
Mr. Chairman, I'll just point out a couple things in Article 1 that maybe didn't get covered in the spreadsheet, some of appropriation language. On page 2 of the bill, the way the appropriations work with Housing Finance Agency is a little unique compared to the other agencies. All the money is appropriated from the, you'll see on line 2.6 through 2.9, all the money is appropriated from the general fund, and then it is transferred into the Housing Development Fund. This is a fund that is established in the Housing Finance Agency, and it is commingled with some of their other financing programs. And I also point out in Chapter 462A.21, Subdivision 10, states that all the money appropriated and is transferred to this fund is available until spent. So it's a little bit different in some other agencies. It's once it leaves the general fund and gets transferred over into this housing development fund, it is all available until spent. And that has been in statute for a number of years. So I just want to point that out, that this agency is a little unique in that. So there is one line item on page 3 that does state that this is a one-time on line 3.6 and is available until expended. That isn't really necessary within this rider, and if that was changed, it would just say that carve-out would only be available. If there was a date put on that one, the money wouldn't go back to the general fund. It would go back to the challenge program. So I just want to point that out. On page 5, the homework starts with home. I want to point out that this program was expanded to cover all children. It used to just be children, school-age children. That's on line 5.15 where it talks about families. And there's some language later on in the bill that clarifies that this program now applies to all children. On page 6, the Family Homeless Prevention Program, there's some language in this bill that is similar to the bill that came through earlier that provided fiscal year 23 rental assistance. Line 6.27 through 6.29 does say that the rental assistance can be provided for more than 24 months, and that was also in the previous rental assistance bill that came through. And I'll just point out all the new programs start on line or on page 11, starting with subdivision 17. I'm not going to go through all those. I went through them and tried to give a brief description of those when I went through the spreadsheet, but those are all the new programs start with subdivision 17 and run all the way through subdivision 30. Subdivision 31 just gives the Commissioner of Housing Finance Agency the authority to transfer some money between some of the different appropriations in this bill if they to address high priority housing needs. And Subdivision 32 is a report that applies back to the legislature that applies to all the programs in this bill and just includes some broad descriptions of what must be about grant awards, geographic distribution of the projects, recipients of funds, and items like that. So this is just asking the agency to provide a report to the legislature on all the programs in this bill. And that's all I have for Article 2. And I think Ms. Painter is going to point out a couple things in Article 1. She's going to point out some things in Article 2.
Ms. Painter, go ahead and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The policy provisions in Article 2 all relate to spending programs, and since Mr. Mueller's gone over a lot of that, I'm not going to go over those again. But I did want to point out a few sections of note to you. Section 15 on page 26 allows the agency to refund nonprofit housing bonds already authorized. And Section 20 on page 31 allows the agency to issue housing infrastructure bonds to refund bonds already authorized. And in both of these cases, the refunding of bonds can only occur if the debt servicing cost would be reduced. The other thing I'd like to point out to you is on Section 19 on page 31, it adds the authorization to issue up to $250 million in housing infrastructure bonds.
I have one question about the high-rise sprinkler grant program. Page 15, you point out that $4 million of that is for two specific buildings, and you mentioned you're doing a study to find out how many there are. Do we have any clue how many there are? I mean, is there in informal tracking? Obviously, you're asking the cities to report, but do you know how many there are roughly? I mean, do we know at least how many there are?
Mr. Chair and members, we don't know how many there are. It's not something that's tracked, and that's part of the problem, is that, you know, county to county, we don't have a way to track these at this moment. So putting together the study to really find out what that number is a crucial part of figuring out what this investment actually will need to look like in the long run. Because once you get above a certain height, those sprinklers are more expensive to put in, and they weren't put in originally in a lot of cases. And so those folks are really at a higher risk. So we do need to find out that number, but we don't have it.
Chair.
Senator Dreheim.
Thank you. If I may add to that discussion on the sprinkler system, it's for buildings 7 stories or higher. And I think in either last year or this year in committee, we heard testimony, you know, that there were dozens of buildings, and it's a match program. And there has been other funding sources for that, and most communities have gone through and made sure all the buildings are sprinkled, but we wouldn't want another accident to happen, and I think it is an important piece of the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Sir Muhammad.
Yeah, just adding to that, Mr. Chair, just in my district that we have two buildings, the sewer towers that are not sprinkled, and I think right across, which is Senator Dietzix, were the two buildings that burnt down to, I think, 2019, a few years ago, and so I think we have more than we actually expect that'll come out of this research. So,
thank you. Further questions? And if not, Senator Port, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have the A23 amendment, which I'll speak about briefly, and I also think Ms. James has some insights on this, and Senator Murphy as well. So this is an amendment to require some stronger financial review of nonprofit grant recipients. As a part of stronger and better governance, we want to make sure that taxpayer money that is going out into our communities is being used responsibly, and this has some stronger oversight. And I will pass it to Ms. James, if that's all right, Mr. Chair.
Sure.
Somebody is not muted online.
You can sign ordinance with a relationship to the child. So see me here, get a blocking pen, to make sure the proper environment will work.
Senator Pratt. Senator Pratt, is it your microphone? We're hearing everything. Did you like to? Senator Pratt, do you have a question? We're hearing lots of background noise. Did you have a question?
Yes, Mr. Chair. This amendment wasn't posted, and it's not in our email. It's very confusing.
It's Senator Pratt, it's in the packets and it's online. We'll have, can you find it before Ms. James goes through it?
Well, Mr. Chair, I checked the posting and it wasn't posted as of about 10 minutes.
Okay, we apologize. It may not be online right now. We're trying to get that posted I thought it had been, but can we have Ms. James go through it? Though I apologize to anybody who is the one or two members who are online who are having trouble getting access to it. Maybe we can email it to Senator Pratt. Ms. James, can you go through it then with us?
Mr. Chair and members, this new section requires granting agencies to provide additional oversight for grants awarded from appropriations in this act. It's an uncoded section, so it only applies to the grants in this act. It applies to competitive, sole source, single source, and legislative named grants. Subdivision 1 requires the granting agency to assess the risk that a recipient of a grant would not or could not perform the duties required of the grantee. It requires the agency to review a list of specified information, 990s and other financial information before or as part of making the risk assessment. Subdivision 2 authorizes the agency to require additional information if the agency, if the grantee has not previously been the recipient of grants of this size and a requirement to perform similar duties under a grant. Subdivision 3 authorizes an agency that doesn't have adequate resources to provide this grant management oversight to contract with the Department of Administration to have admin perform those functions. Subdivision 4 authorizes an agency to not award a grant if the agency determines that there is an appreciable risk that the grantee cannot and would not perform the duties. It requires the agency to provide the grantee 45 days to address the agency's concern. This subdivision doesn't apply to the legislatively named grants. Those are addressed in the next subdivision, Subdivision 5, which requires an agency, if they have identified an appreciable risk, to notify certain people in the legislature, and then to delay the award of the grant until after the adjournment of the next regular or special session of the legislature. Subdivision 6 relates to subgrants. When an agency provides a grant to a grantee and then that grantee enters into other agreements with other entities and passes that money on, this section requires the same sort of review for those subgrantees and requires the agency to be a named party on the grant agreement. Subdivision 7 notes that the requirements of this section are in addition to other requirements in law.
Thank you, Ms. Jameson. Senator Pratt, we did email you, and they are now posted online as well. And I'll just say that I had discussed this issue with Senator Murphy, who has some provisions in the state agency bill, but we also thought this might be an appropriate thing to do to make sure we have a good process. Anyhow, with that, Senator Pratt, do you have your hand up? No. Does question, Senator Dreheim.
Thank you, Chair Marty, and thank you, Senator Port, for bringing this amendment forward. I think it is a step in the right direction. When we look at all the money going to nonprofits and other groups, just an arm's length away from our own state agencies, I think it's important to make sure they're going to the right place. So I support the amendment.
And I think it is helpful, the subgrantee provision in the bill where the state has some tie when they make grants to subgrantees. The Senator Champion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To Senator Port. Senator Port, in your bill, are you only giving money to nonprofits? And if not, why are we just concentrating on the nonprofits and not necessarily others who may also be in a like or similar position? So, Senator Port, thank you for your answer.
Mr. Chair and Senator Champion, we actually don't have a lot of sort of set-asides in housing. It's not typically been a big enough bucket to warrant that. This is the first year where we have sort of more than a few. So it does seem like some additional oversight is potentially required. The majority of the money that goes out through the Housing Finance Agency out into the state goes to counties and municipalities, goes to governmental agencies. So this is sort of a new thing for the agency to have more subgrantees through nonprofits and some for-profit as well, which I think is potentially a piece we should add to this to not just sort of single out one group.
Senator Champion.
Thank you so much for your comments, because I do believe that we should be thoughtful, but I don't think we should only focus on one aspect or one type of organization because of challenges someplace else. If we're really concerned about oversight, then we'll make sure that there's a real balance here. And so I think that I won't come with an amendment today, but I hope that we can discuss that, because I do want to make sure that we're being thoughtful and fair and not necessarily talking through one frame or another.
And I think the goal is to make sure that all grants, all the money is wisely spent and so on. Senator Murphy, we'll move this. Okay, but Senator Pappas had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and perhaps for Ms. James online on Subdivision 2, line 116, what type of organization would be exempt from filing a 990 or a 990EZ?
Ms. James, are you?
Because we're just talking about nonprofits here, I think.
Mr. Chair, Senator Pappas, I do not know. I would have to look into that issue.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just wondering, Mr. Nauman, where did the language come from then that said that if a grantee is exempt from a 990?
Senator Pappas, this is pulled together from a number of things, and I was understood that that perhaps if they're a new organization or I don't know if there is a minimum threshold for 990. I don't know that there is. Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members. I have been with the Department of Administration working in the state government committee to create a more uniform across the enterprise means of administering grants, because every agency manages them differently, we have learned in the course of these last few months. And so in addition to the work that the Walz administration is doing on this, and I think that they're doing powerful work, I think it is important that the legislature is also, sort of in a hand-in-glove way, putting into policy the means to make sure that the grants that we are appropriating money for are available, they're transparent so we can see them, there's uniformity, and there's also action. So they're actionable, which you will see on the second page of this. As I understand the question that's being asked about the 990, I believe that this language is about organizations that are newly formed that may have very little revenue to report. And you wouldn't want to exclude an organization like that from a possible grant. And at the same time, they may not be able to complete that part of a grant request. So as I understand it, that is the origination of that section to which you are asking questions.
Senator, Mr. Nauman.
Mr. Chair and Senator Pappas, Senator Murphy, I think is largely correct. What I will say is that I did a quick search on exemptions. This is deep in the IRS code, and I don't want to go too far. So it's essentially a federal IRS tax requirements. I think probably consulting with the tax staff on this point would be advisable. I don't want to offer an opinion too quickly.
Further discussion on the A23 amendment? If not, on Senator Murphy's motion, A23 amendment be adopted. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Other amendments? Senator Dreheim.
Thank you, Chair Marty, and thank you, Senator Port. There are a lot of great things in this bill. I know you worked hard on it. One area improvement, I think, would be the A18. So I'd like to offer the A18, Chair, if I could.
Since that, yes, Senator Dreheim moves the A18, which should be in the packets.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Chair. And this is a newer group that testified in hearing. And from when they originally testified and they actually met with me in my office to what the final bill was a little different. So I thought, and I think I had expressed, that I thought it needed a little more guardrails along what they are doing. Originally, they had proposed just new unit creation, and by the time it came up in the bill here we're looking at today, 2566, they added more types of uses for the money, and I think we should just have a little reporting on that. They are receiving, I believe it was $10 million. Pretty straightforward. I hope everybody can support it, and it's a friendly amendment, I hope.
Senator Port.
Thank you, Senator Marty and Senator Dreheim. Yes, I see this as a friendly amendment.
Thank you.
Is there further discussion on the A18 amendment of Senator Dreheim? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Other amendments?
Chair Marty?
Senator Dreheim.
Thank you. I have the A20 I would also like to offer.
This is also in the packets. Senator Dreheim.
Thank you, Chair Marty. And once again, Senator Port, this is something we have talked about. And, you know, when we look at all the great programs the agency runs, sometimes the description of what they do with the funds are kind of intertwined. And I truly believe we're in the situation that we're in because we lack units, plain supply and demand. And sometimes with a program, we'll bundle in the report that we get back new unit creation and remodeling or rehab funds. And I would like to know, and I think the people that we represent would like to know, how many units are we creating with, in this bill, almost $1 billion? So I hope Senator Port will take this as a friendly amendment. It's just asking the agency to be a little more detail-oriented on all their programs and separate new unit creation from rehabs. So thank you.
Senator Port.
Thank you, Senator Marty and Senator Draheim. I think the idea is exactly right. We talked about this in committee a little bit and talked about it with the agency as well, that separating out those numbers, providing more detail will be critical. And this is a significantly larger investment we're making this year, so making sure that detail is right. I am happy to accept this as a friendly amendment with one caveat on paragraph B, on line 1.2 to 1.25, or 1.20 to 1.25. It talks about requiring any entity that receives a grant for new construction or rehab from a program prior to receiving the grant. So like once they've been chosen, but before they receive the grant, to submit that information. And talking with the agency, they just said that's a very fast turnaround. And so they would like to work with us to refine that language and make sure it's actually feasible. They understand the output that we want and the information. Just want to make sure that we're putting something that's actually feasible in. So happy to take this as friendly today and just work with you on the language to make sure we get it right.
Senator Draheim.
Thank you, Chair Marty and Senator Port. So for now, would you like me to offer an oral amendment deleting something or leave it to the floor?
I'm happy to take it as it is, okay. Knowing that we'll just need to refine that language for the floor.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Draheim moves the A20 amendment. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Port.
I don't have any other amendments, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the committee's time and consideration on this bill. I think it's a bill we can all be very proud of moving forward, and it will help every community across the state of Minnesota.
And I will mention that Commissioner Ho is here from the Housing Finance Agency, and we have others here basically to answer questions unless people want to hear. Ms. Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had one question for the author of the bill, Senator Port. We know that housing is a statewide crisis. We know that it reaches into every community across the state. And I'm wondering if you can just share with me the reach of the bill in order to tackle that, if you will.
Absolutely, Mr. Chair and Senator Marty. Senator Murphy, there is significant investment in this bill that spans the state. There's about $200 million specifically specified for Greater Minnesota projects directly, which is not always a thing we've done in the past. A lot of times it's a statewide project that pieces of it go to each place, but there's almost $200 million specifically set aside for Greater Minnesota. What I will say about the needs in Greater Minnesota is that there's so much need for workforce housing, market rate housing that people can buy so that companies can grow across the state of Minnesota. We're hearing from businesses that they would like to expand here. They would like to grow. There's no houses for their workers to buy. So it's a really critical issue. Also, the large investment in manufactured homes. There are manufactured home parks across the state. It's one of the most affordable housing tools that we have, and we need to preserve those. We are seeing them being bought up at this point, those manufactured housing parks, by out-of-state investors who then don't keep up the infrastructure and make them nearly unlivable for people, where buses can't go down the roads to pick up kids, garbage trucks can't go in. It becomes a very difficult situation for those communities. So there's a lot of investment to upkeep those around the state and to help as they form co-ops and maybe become, purchase the home park themselves as the owners. Then the rest of the bill is statewide programs. So the whole rest of the bill will go out to communities statewide based on the need. And in particular, I will say the rental assistance program, Bring It Home, Senator Muhammad's bill, is a critical piece to that. I know we talked in this committee earlier when I brought the FHPAP bill about how some communities across Minnesota had seen 118, 130% increase in evictions. That might be, as we talked in one county, it was an increase in 13 families that were evicted, which feels like a small number, right, when you think about the statewide. But that county had no emergency shelter. Where did those 13 families go? Like, we don't know the answer to that. So this, the rental assistance, making sure that people can stay in their communities, that they don't have to move somewhere else to find shelter, is really a critical piece to making sure that communities all across Minnesota are able to thrive, people are able to stay in them, stay connected to the things that, that matter to them. Thank you.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Porter, a quick question on Urban Homeworks. When I look at the bill, it talks about being able to use part of that $10 million grant for acquisition of property. Is that what it's intended to be? It also talks about rehabilitation and construction, but are we allowing this this nonprofit to purchase hard assets?
Ms. Painter or Senator Port?
It's line 2.27.
Chair?
Senator Jay Hunt?
My understanding of this particular bill, they can buy hard assets.
Senator Marty, Senator Pratt, yes, they can buy homes with this and fix them up and resell them. That's a portion of the work that they do.
Well, Mr. Chair, I've got a real concern when we start giving private organizations money to purchase hard assets like real estate. Even more of a concern based on how this has been described. While we may want to help rehab homes, I don't know that we should be providing the equity that then allows an organization like this to turn a profit after buying homes using state funds. I think it's a bad practice for us to do. We've seen it in a number of other bills. I know I appreciate Senator Champion's work in the jobs bill to lessen the impact, but I think it's a really bad precedent for us to set, especially here at the Finance Committee.
Senator Port.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Pratt, and members. You know, we are seeing across Minnesota an increase in hedge funds and investors buying up single-family homes and then renting them back to communities without doing the work of fixing them up and increasing the price of rent. We particularly saw this happen in North Minneapolis over the last 2 years, where over 600 homes were purchased by hedge funds who then rent them to the communities, decreasing the amount of homes that are available for people from the community to buy. Urban Homeworks can purchase or rehab or build homes that they then can sell to households who meet income requirements of 50 to 60% of that area median income. And that is a critical piece that is being lost currently. And I will also say that they are a nonprofit, so they are not making profit on these, and would then just defer to Senator Champion, whose bill it was, if we could hear from him.
Senator Champion.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Poore, for your robust answer. And Senator Pratt, two things. One is, in the job bill, we did address this an issue similar to this, but I do think this issue is slightly different because Urban Homeworks is a credible organization that's been around a long time and has been really thoughtful around rehab and making sure that families are able to become much more stabilized by, you know, being in homes. And so I would say that that was one of the reasons why I really promoted this bill and this initiative, is because I've seen their work. I've seen their work with families and scatter sites, and I don't have any concerns around them getting equity and then turning around and selling it to a family at some increased cost where there's more money that goes into their personal coffers. Any revenue that they generate will always be with an eye towards affordability of homes, the need to stabilize homes, but also if there's an opportunity to have a reoccurring fund that would help more families. So it's not just to make some money and run like some speculator or others that we would have a concern about. But thank you, Senator Pratt, for your concern. But I do believe that in this scenario, that this organization is an appropriate one to deal with the families and our trusted resources. So thank you.
And Senator Champion, I think either you or Senator Poore said they're selling these homes to people at 50, maybe it says it in the bill, 50 to 60% of the median income. So there's very, very low income for home ownership.
Are you on the flight to Liberia?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Look, I'm not disparaging the organization. I don't know about them. They may be very credible. I'm not even suggesting, as Senator Poore said, that there might not be a need for someone to step in and help with assistance. We could have done this with a loan and provided that money back, and we could help finance it. But the fact that we are basically giving this money to an organization to purchase property, turn around and sell it, presumably at a higher rate, I think sets a very bad precedent for us as a state. At what point do we just allow anybody to buy property and turn around and sell it? And I'm not even suggesting that they won't put the proceeds of the sale back to good use. But I think it's I'll go to the fact that I think it's a bad precedent. I think it's a bad practice for the state to be giving money to private organizations, and a nonprofit is a private organization, to purchase property, to purchase any hard asset. And especially when we know that the intent is then to turn around and sell it at a higher price, when it could be done through a loan program, whether it could be done, we could be allowing the monies to be used for rehabilitation, but require that some sort of real estate investment trust, which is effectively what's being set up here, is using outside funds to purchase the asset. That's the concern I have. It has nothing to do with the organization. It has nothing to do with how good their mission is. It's about the role of the state and what is the role that the state should be taking.
Thank you. Senator Poore, any more? Senator Westrum.
Mr. Chair, just to raise, I guess, chime in a little on the same concern. It seems like we're taking a pretty big step, Senator Poore, in basically using taxpayer funding to speculate on the market and basically do what a lot of small and middle size and other businesses do, which is rehab houses, fix them up, make them more usable, more desirable, make a profit in some cases. What is the difference? Why are we doing this to this magnitude here? And then where do we stop? I mean, do we go into farming next and start buying a bunch of land and then sell it off to some other people just so we have different people that own the land? I guess I'm a little concerned to this point, but can you comment on that a little bit more? And I mean, it might seem like a nice gesture in the beginning, but do we really want to go down this road? It seems like it's probably not prudent.
Senator Port.
Thank you, Senator Marty, Chair Marty, and Senator Westrom. The big difference in this case is that they are, Urban Homeworks is reselling them to community members who have routinely been cut out of home buying opportunities at an affordable price. So they talked in our committee, and if you check out their website, they have a significant amount of information on their financials, on information that's available. They talk about paying a significant chunk of the price to keep it affordable. What we are not seeing across our state is, folks that are coming in to flip houses, they are not then trying to sell them back at an affordable rate. This is not a thing that the market is doing on its own. It is a requirement that we desperately need because housing is far outpacing the wages and the ability for people to have them. And so, being able to do that rehab, acquisition those houses, and then selling them back to community who has routinely been cut out of systemically been cut out of home ownership at prices that they can afford is an absolute need and should be a responsibility of us. And I will say to the comparison to farmers or the idea of where we're going next, we're actually looking at following in the footsteps of what we've done with farms in Minnesota by banning corporate ownership of farms. We are looking at doing that for single family housing as well, and we will be discussing that next session, because as we learned in farming, it is not good for Minnesota farmers, for family farmers, when corporations can come up and buy up everything. The same is true of housing in Minnesota. We should be doing the work that needs to be done on housing and then getting it back into the hands of Minnesotans.
Mr. Chair.
And Senator Champion, I have something to add.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that robust answer again, Senator Port. Senator Westrom, I think there's a difference, and I want to make sure that we're very clear as to the difference between speculators and Urban Homeworks. Speculators come to strip equity from communities. Let's be clear. What Urban Homeworks is doing is taking vacant homes that are already vacant, that are not livable at the time, rehabbing them, creating affordable housing options. The chair already talked about what target population that they're looking at and that they're addressed in order to stabilize community. Stabilization of communities is the intent of Urban Homeworks. And that is not to say others can't do these things, but I think we want to be very clear why building equity is important. It's because it helps families not only be stabilized, but build wealth. We want them to be lifted out of poverty. And so I don't want us to lose sight of that by looking at things only from one perspective. A respectful perspective. I'm not suggesting that we should not continue to always evaluate and assess what is around us, but it's about making sure that there's equity and home ownership and opportunities for families to be stabilized, because we know that there are better educational outcomes and all the other benefits that now surface when there's home ownership. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Senator Dreheim, and Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Senator Champion, for your comments, and Senator Port a little bit. But I think we're kind of missing the boat a little bit on the discussion of taking homes out of the market by private investors. You know, when we look at the $100 million, I think it's $100 million going to the Community Stabilization, or NOAA. Just so everybody understands, that is, NOAA was nationally occurring affordable housing. But what they do is they have a nonprofit buy the home and then rent it out. So if our goal is to get people into home ownership, this $100 million does the exact opposite. It pulls those homes out of the market where people could have the opportunity to purchase. And so I think, you know, as a body, we have to decide what's a higher priority. And I just want to make sure everybody understands that, you know, it isn't just the private industry that goes and buys homes and fixes them up. They do it without tax dollars. What this $100 million does is do the same thing a private investor would do, which would be invest in a community. So I wouldn't say they strip out equity out of a community. I would say they do the exact opposite. They put money into a neighborhood. They pay someone for that house. They remodel that house. So I just want to make sure the record's clear. Thank you.
Senator Pratt and Senator Westrom.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to get back, you know, I think when we look at this organization and we look at their 990, this is an organization that has reported $16 million in total revenue. They get almost $9 million in grants and contributions, anywhere between, you know, $650 and $1.5 million in program service revenue. And then they actually made in 2019 $6.7 million in investment income. Mr. Chair, we don't need to help this organization buy properties. They have plenty of money. They have plenty of cash flow. And if we want to help them rehab these buildings, if we want to help them rejuvenate the neighborhoods, that's one thing. But I still continue to have a real concern, especially an organization with these kind of financials, which I think shows some stability, some credibility, but also shows that there's not a need for this to happen. And Senator Port, I would hope between now and the floor, we can have a conversation about striking that word acquisition.
Thank you. Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair and Senator Port, to your earlier answer, what is the guarantees or guardrails then that we have in this language that Urban Homeworks is going to actually buy or have them available for people to buy and not just buy them up and be a nonprofit rental company with cash flow? And then what are the other protections? It's this first person that buys it doesn't sell it in a year or 5 years, and just in essence speculates on the taxpayers, and they're really using it for a long-term home stable situation and building that equity over 10, 20 years that Senator Champion talked about, which is a great goal and a great opportunity for all of us. But what are the guarantees we have in the bill? If you can give me a little more comfort on that, because it seems like a lot of times this money goes out and then there's really no follow-up or protections, and somebody buys it and all of a sudden 2-3 years later it's been sold twice and people are just using the taxpayers to either make money along the way or not the intended purpose. If you can touch on that, that'd be great.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Senator Westrom, I'm not sure if you were here at the beginning. We adopted the A18 amendment exactly to this point, requiring, it was offered by Senator Dreheim, requiring that Urban Homeworks submit a report to the chairs and ranking minority members that talks about how much is used for acquisition, how much is used for rehab, and how much is used for construction, along with the number of units that are acquired, rehab, or constructed, and the amount of the appropriation has spent. It also talks about if a home is sold or transferred within the first year, that information must be covered in the report, including the price at which the home was sold, as well as how much was spent to complete the project. So I believe we have addressed this already earlier with Senator Dreheim's amendment, but as I told him, I'd be happy to work with you if there are other guardrails, but I think this is significant and goes over the points that we're looking at.
Thank you, Senator Port. Mr. Chair, just follow up.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Senator Port, I think that's a helpful step in the right direction. The one thing I guess I'm thinking it might be missing in there is just the language that just says that restricts, and maybe it's a restrictive deed that we need to put language on, that it has to be bought only by somebody that's going to use it as a residence and a primary home. Might be some other thoughts we have, but to your earlier point and Senator Champion's point, and this all looks good and rosy and like a great business model as long as you've got stable or increasing home values. There's many people that think we're closing in on a bubble. Many of us have seen two or three in our lifetime, maybe more. Senator Marty, I don't know how many you've seen, but a little humor in that, Mr. Chair. But my point is, we have bubbles, and you get into a situation like 08, 09, 10, 11, 12 for several years. Housing stock just went down and went down significantly. You go back the decade before, a decade and a half before, and there was soft markets then, and so. All of a sudden, they might end up with stock that they can't get rid of, or they have to sell at a loss. And then what do they do, Senator Port? If you can comment on that, then that's my last question.
Can I make a comment before you, Senator Port? I've known people who have volunteered at Urban Homeworks and at Habitat, and when they're putting these together, they are losing money on the deal, in effect. They're using volunteer labor. They're having to subsidize, in effect, subsidize the price for somebody to be able to buy it affordably. So it's not like they're going to lose money all of a sudden because of a recession. They are organizations that rely on volunteers to help rehab houses, to help people get into housing. And their whole point of it is home ownership. And it's interesting discussion we're having, but I just want people to understand. I mean, the people I've known who volunteered, they're pouring in their time and their skills and so on to help people get affordable housing. And it's not like they're hoping to make money on these, because that's not what they're doing. Anyway, Senator Port, that was just my own knowledge from people I've known who volunteered there.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Senator Westrom, I essentially would say the same thing. The goal of this organization is not to make money. It is to provide affordable housing opportunities to the community. So they know and understand that this is going to cost them more than they're going to sell a house for. And that is part of the mission of the organization, making sure that affordable housing is available to community members in the communities where they live. Taking up these abandoned, non-cared for homes that are not livable without this, doing the work to rehab them, and then selling them at a price that is affordable to the community is a service. It's not a for-profit enterprise. And so, you know, I will also say it's one-time money. In this moment when we did decide as a legislature to invest a significant amount of money in housing in a way we have never done before, we are willing to try a few new things and see if they work, because frankly, what we've been doing for the last four decades has been an abysmal failure.
Further discussion, Senator Muhammad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, sometimes in this committee and a lot of committees, but particularly in this one, we get so focused on, we focus a lot on things that often I feel don't reflect on the issues that we ran on and why we're here. Housing is, I think, the issue that I often think can and should be a bipartisan issue, because everyone runs on housing. I think the most basic need for Minnesotans is shelter, and especially because we live in a state that is really cold, and we have thousands of people who live here, who live outside in our streets every day. And every day I drive by these folks, and I cannot believe I have the opportunity to be able to ensure that they get the basic need that they need, that we can do. I want to kind of recenter our conversation and for us to focus on why we're here, what we're doing, and what this bill does. And I think this bill creates a historic investment for everyone in our state. And I think Chair Port has done a good job of balancing the needs of the people across our state. The thing I heard most about, especially in the beginning of the session, were from people who were from Greater Minnesota. And it was about people who live in the Iron Range in the Northern Shore. And what they said was companies like Delta want to come and create jobs, but they can't because we don't have enough housing. And I think this bill takes care of that. It takes care of the needs of our our folks who are seniors, families, and it takes a step in towards preventing homelessness. And I think part of that step is the Bring a Home bill. I don't think that bill has got the budget that it needs, and I think we'll continue to make sure that it gets that budget as we move forward in the next few years. But it's a step in the right direction. And I just wanted to take a moment and say that this bill really is not about, this is a conversation that should not be about politics and who and what we can do, but it should be about how we can move the needle and solve the issue and house people, and I think it does that. And so I want to take a moment and thank Senator Port, and hopefully I want to take a moment and also move the bill.
Senator Champion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I decided that I wasn't going to say anything after that eloquent notion put forward by Senator Muhammad, but I thought that I should at least say something since I got the mic. I just want to make sure that we are clear that when we think in terms of the various options around housing that is in this bill, that's what we want, options. Not everyone can own a home right now. Some people want to rent. We still have to make sure that it's affordable, increased opportunities for families. And Senator Draham, I just want to correct something or at least lend my understanding about the NOAA project or bill that you referenced. My understanding is that they don't buy homes and convert them to rentals, but they buy multifamily rental buildings that are at risk of being converted out of affordable rents and preserves them as affordable, because that's important. It's still important, right? Notwithstanding what their role is, and thank you, Senator Port, and thank you for the rich discussion, because I do think it's important for us to think about housing being something that every family needs and that we should do everything we can to make sure that there are various housing options. Thank you.
Thank you. And Senator Port, I want to thank you for the bill as well. I think we have a true housing crisis, and this is historic investments in addressing it. I think you would agree it's not nearly what we need to address the problem, and I keep thinking if I had to spend two nights homeless, what struggle would be, and yet we have 20,000 homeless folks struggling with homelessness every year, and in terms of people spending more than a third of their income on housing, I mean, we have huge numbers of that. So I think this is a well-balanced package of that, so I appreciate that. And before Senator Muhammad moves the bill, did you have any last comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I am I'm really proud of this bill. I think it takes a significant step towards meeting the actual needs of our communities around housing. You're right, it's not the only step we'll need to take. This will need to be ongoing, looking at housing differently than we have in the past. But I think it's well balanced across the state, across the spectrum of needs. As Senator Champion so eloquently put, it offers options, options that people need to be able to afford their homes, which is the real critical piece of it. And I will say that this is also the first and a very large step towards ending child homelessness, which we can do. In Minnesota, we can choose to do that. And the rental assistance and the family homeless prevention program do a lot, make a big step in that direction. I'm incredibly proud of this bill, and I look forward to moving it to the floor.
Thank you. Senator Muhammad moves that Senate file 2566 as amended be recommended to pass.
So moved.
On that motion, all those online, please turn on your cameras for voting. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Port and staff and everybody involved in the housing bill. We are going to recess now because we have to quit in about 10 minutes anyway, and we will come back half an hour after session to deal with both the disaster assistance appropriations and omnibus agriculture broadband rural development. With that, this committee is in recess until half hour after session adjourns. Hope you can grab some lunch after that.